What a crazy night. What a crazy night. So, yes, I did lose two different PowerPoint presentations I put together. And finally emailed one to Scott this morning, and it didn't go through, so who knows what's going on. But the elections are over, but the tallying is not. Who knows what to think? A little unsettling, but we talked about it last week, that we are the salt. God says we are the salt of the earth. And so salt we give flavor to things. We make life here better. We kill infection. That's one of our purposes, to stifle sin and to reduce it. We preserve nations. There's a destruct level. No one knows exactly what it is, but there's a destruct level, and we hold back God's wrath, his righteous wrath, from destroying nations if there's enough of us in the nation. Being salt, though, if we want to be effective as salt, then we need to be able to communicate effectively. And so we're going to be talking about that for at least the next 3 weeks. Communication, because communication, our conversations, they direct our life. They are ever so powerful. And it's funny because social science has been saying that now for about 29 years, that there's something way more important than IQ, and that's social intelligence or emotional intelligence. And it is what they're saying is the one thing that determines where your life will go, how successful you'll be, how much satisfaction and joy you'll have in life. So we're going to talk about, I chuckle because they came out with it in about 1991 or so. Of course, the Bible had been saying that since about a long time. Solomon wrote Proverbs back in about 900, 950 BC. And so I just love it when science says, yes, we made a discovery, and it's been in the Bible all this time. We say, praise God, look at his wisdom. Because science is proving what God has always said to be true. So yeah, no note. So we're gonna have fun this morning then. So we're gonna talk about how our conversations determine our lives. They determine our lives. And so we have conversations, three types of conversation. As Christians, we have conversations with God. You know, 1 Thessalonians 5:17 says, pray without ceasing, talk to the Lord. When we read the Bible, we're listening to what he has to say to us. So we converse with God. Then we have conversations with ourselves. For instance, Psalms 103, verse 1 says, bless the Lord, O my soul. David wrote it for all of us. We sing many of the Psalms. And the Psalm right there, is the person speaking to himself. I want to bless the Lord, O my soul. In 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 18, it says, let no man deceive himself. How can a person deceive himself? By talking to himself or herself, which we all do. And if you are one of those closet people that talk to yourself, you're not weird, because all people talk to themselves. Now, if you talk out loud, then you're weird like I am, but all people talk to themselves, and it's possible through our self-talk to deceive ourselves. So I'm making a point. We can talk with God, we can talk with ourselves, but the only one we're focusing on this morning is people to people, having conversations with other human beings, and those determine the direction of your life. So if you said to me, wait a minute, are you telling me that God doesn't determine the... No, I'm not saying that. Of course he does. But when I put this on the board, that when we have conversation with people and those conversations determine the direction of life, all I'm doing is agreeing with what God says is true. Because he says our conversations, and you'll see several, determine the outcome, the direction of our lives. So here's one here. Proverbs is full of great stuff, by the way. You know that. Proverbs is full of great things about conversing with others, how to have quality conversations, what to do, what not to do. So in Proverbs 18:20, it says, with the fruit of a man's mouth, his stomach will be satisfied. What? With the fruit of a man's mouth, his stomach will be satisfied? It doesn't have to do with the mouth making real fruit. What it's talking about is the outcome, the produce that we get from the things we say. So people who have learned to speak well, to communicate and get along with other people, there's an outcome from that. There's a reward from that. People who learn to communicate well have a better chance of getting a job, have a better chance of keeping a job, have a better chance of doing well at the job and making more money. And the fruit of a man's mouth, in this case, is money to buy groceries, money to buy things that we need. It's a figurative statement about the blessings that come when we learn how to speak properly and well. And many of you do speak properly and well. Then, moving in the same verse, it also says, he, this man, will be satisfied with the product of his lips. So not only will his stomach be satisfied, it says his stomach will be satisfied with the fruits of his mouth, but he will be satisfied, which means the person who learns to communicate well and get along with others, he's going to enjoy his life. And that's exactly what social scientists are saying today. It's later on in my notes, but I'll spill the beans now. That when we train ourselves to speak properly and appropriately, it affects our income in a good way, our career path, our marriage, relationship with our children, relationship with all people, everybody, it affects it all. And that's satisfying. And God says, it is so. He says, as we train ourselves, in other words, our lives will become more and more satisfying. This is a pretty heavy verse next. It's the following verse, it's verse 21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Wow. I think some of the Proverbs you just kind of have to mull over and meditate on. That's what they're there for, by the way. But I think the power of the tongue and those who love it will eat its fruit is both good and bad. I think what it's saying here is those who just, you know, they love to talk, but it's bad, it's negative, it's slanderous. And some people love doing that. They're in the habit of doing that. They will eat its fruit, and in their case, it's death. It's not good. But others who speak life and tell people about Jesus and lift spirits and are a blessing, as we have in this congregation, so many of you, that you will experience life. That is the fruit that you will get from the power of your speech, power of the tongue, power of speech. It's all the same thing. So how do we create conversations that shape our lives in the right direction? How do we go about doing that? Well, all communication has two basic parts. I know this will shock you, but one part of communication is listening, and one part is speaking. Two parts of all communication, right? And so, it's amazing to me that even as I put these lessons together, and I'm not done yet, I'm blown away. I'm reading some things and studying about all. I read the book of Proverbs, the whole thing, just a couple days ago again, and I am blown away at some of the things at my age that I'm still learning that are going to make me even a better communicator and a better husband. And so I'll share some of those with you today, but not all. But speaking and listening, how can you listen better so that people want to speak to you? Catch this, I stole this from somebody. But how can you listen better? Sorry, how can you listen better so people want to talk to you? People like talking to a good listener. And the follow-up question is, how can you speak better so that people will want to listen to you? And as good as some of you are, and you're just outstanding communicators, kind and gentle. My wife and I were talking about one of you just this morning as we were driving here and how blessed we are. But there are many of you, in fact, two of them, I'm sorry, we talked about two people like that. As good as some of you are, we know that we're not as good as we can be, because James 3:2 says, we all, James is either the Lord's brother or an apostle, but either way, he's inspired, and he says, we all stumble in what we say. And no, he says, we all stumble in many ways, James 3:2. But if a man does not stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man. Which tells me that as good as our 2-3 bills are, that all of our bills, Spawn, Speck, and Downey, can be better at communicating. Every righteous woman in here can be better, because I read that if you can control what you say, you're perfect. And that doesn't exist, right? So there's so much satisfaction and success in life that's determined by how well we communicate. I mentioned that. It affects our income and influence, family, career, relationships, all of that stuff. If there's anybody like me that has come a ways but has a long way to go, I'd like to motivate you just to think a little bit about this and say, you know, I'm going to put a little more energy in. I'm going to share some tools with you, as I've kind of hinted already. But if you want a better and better life, better and better relationships, then learn how to communicate in these two skills, listening and speaking. So as I put the lesson together and I said I saw things that I can add on, I said to myself, wow, I fall short in some of these things, far more than I realized. In fact, in a couple of them, I fall way short. So maybe I have some company, who knows? Okay, so scriptures on listening. Proverbs 13:3 says, the one who guards his mouth preserves his life. The one who opens wide his lips comes to ruin. What's it saying? It's saying be very careful what you let out. Listening is such an important skill. Anybody can blab, but listening is so important. You'd be very careful what comes out. Listen well with these. Careful what comes out of your mouth. The one who opens wide his lips, which means the one who doesn't put enough control or concern into what he or she is saying, they will be ruined by that, is what the proverb is saying. Big stuff here. Proverbs 10:19. When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. That means when a person speaks a lot, anybody speaks a lot, they're going to sin. Transgression is unavoidable. It's a law of averages. Hello? We all stumble, and if anyone doesn't stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man. So this is just kind of repeating what James has to say. And then James 1:26, pretty provocative, pretty powerful. He says, if anyone thinks himself to be religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. Wow. Don't bother coming to church. And I don't really mean that, because even if there's someone that qualifies as having a worthless religion, the more you come, the better chances you will be that you'll fall in love with God, that you'll get some of these skills, that your religion will change from being worthless to being very valuable. But nonetheless, this is how big a deal it is. If we don't control what we say, if we're unconcerned or careless, makes our religion worthless. Is it possible? Is it possible to hear something but not really listen to it? Remember high school math? Now, some of you may just loved it, but I mean, my last year math analysis, it was, my ears were good back then, and I heard every word that he said, but I didn't listen to every word that he said. And if you like math, then what about, did anyone have a boring history teacher? You know, but my point is this, that if your ears work, then you hear everything, but that doesn't mean you listen to everything. There's a difference between hearing and listening. Listening has intention behind it. Listening has a goal behind it. I want to understand what Don is saying and soak it in. If it's advice, live by it. But I want to understand. Or in Mark 8:18, Jesus says, having eyes, do you not see? Having ears, do you not hear? He says something like that several times, right? In the Bible, he's just saying that this isn't enough. Remember the blind man that really, he was the guy in John 9 that could see, and the Pharisees were the ones that were really blind because they didn't use their eyes for the glory of God. People don't use their ears for the glory of God. They hear, but they don't listen. We're just making that point. So we're going to look at 6 listening skills in the next 2 weeks. Only 2 today. 6 listening skills. I hope you learn as much as I did. But the first one is the letter L. I use an acrostic just for fun. I don't use them very often, but they kind of help me remember sometimes. So the first aspect of listening as a child of God is when you're in a conversation, that's what this is all about, communicating with someone, that you look at the person you're speaking to with eyes of love. You look at them with love, and you go, hello. But look, I ask myself the last couple of weeks as I was working on this, do you do that, Mike? So I believe before God that I don't hate anybody. But that isn't saying don't look at people with hatred. That's saying look at people with great value. Look at people as though they're precious. But instead, have you ever fallen in the trap like I have and do, where someone wants to converse with me and I'm irritated? Or I'm really busy and I don't want to be bothered. Or I just don't want to deal with whatever they want me to deal with. It's unpleasant to me. And so, it's not that I hate them, but maybe I'm frustrated or don't want to deal with it and just in a bad mood. And so instead of looking at them and thinking, man, they're important. The issue is important to them. I need to love them so much. I need to look them in the eye with love as God does and deal with it. Now look, I'm going to probably say this one more time later on. Do you ever do sutures? As a nurse, you don't do that. Well, I know you do some important stuff. So let's say that you're doing something important, just about to dispense some drugs that can save lives and take lives. You're just about to dispense them, and you got to read the label on this. Someone runs up, we got to talk, now. Put it down, Andy. You know, or you're assisting a doctor with an operation. There are times you can't do that. And so with Proverbs and with this sermon, understand there's a balance, right? There's time to speak and time to be quiet. But when someone bring something to our attention. Need to deal with it, but we need to deal with it properly because if we love them, not in the romantic sense, but in the value sense, wow, so precious. We deal with them in that sense, we're going to treat them probably better, probably have a better outcome with our conversation. So we want to look at them with love, a child, a spouse. Maybe this is an issue that you and your spouse have dealt with for a while, and so it's kind of a sore spot. Well, you can be irritated, like I've been, you know, and be a little sharp with the language. We've talked about this before. Or you can say, we're going to work this out, hopefully this conversation, and I'm going to look at her as precious, or whoever it is, a friend, an ex, somebody you work with that you run into somebody you haven't seen in 40 years, but in high school, they treated you like dirt. They talked about you behind your back. They mocked you. And here you run into the first time since high school, and they'd like to engage you in a conversation. You still have the pain. You may have forgiven them, but that doesn't mean you're not a little bit anxious. Are they the same person, just as honored as before? And so we learn to look at them like Jesus looks at us when we've sinned. We look at them as precious. We look at them with love. You know, when somebody tells me, "Hey, Mike, I love to preach." Well, that's a good endeavor. That's really a good thing. But I want to know if someone says that to me, if they volunteer that to me, in my mind, I'm asking myself, why? Why? Because there are a lot of benefits to preaching. One is that you not only get to, but you're required to spend some time in the Word, and that is awesome. And so that's one of the benefits. And so you put a sermon together, and even if other people don't get much out of it, hopefully you do. And you get to promote truth. And wow, is that valuable? And you get, hey, we've been doing this wrong, or here's, I just learned that there's a better way or a more truthful way or whatever. And I love truth, so I want to share that with people. Maybe someone just likes talking in front of audiences, want to share some great ideas. But if the preacher does not love the people he's talking to, he shouldn't be in the pulpit. Our ultimate goal, and we have many men here that have preached many times, several that have preached for a living. As I've gotten to know you, I believe you're that kind of men. But that has got to be number one, whether it's a conversation one to many or one on one. We have to look at the people we're conversing with tenderness and real compassion. I mean, a real concern for them, wanting the best for everybody. 1 Corinthians, on this idea of love, 1 Corinthians 13:1. If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have, of angels, angelic language, this is miraculous. If I can do that, but I do not have love, then I become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. No matter how great an orator someone is, without the love, or one-on-one, I shouldn't be getting on preaching too much because this is about us and other people. But no matter how good a conversationalist, how brilliant a person is, if we don't have the love, then our words without love are just noise. Without love, our words without love are just noise, according to God, 1 Corinthians 13:1 and 2 and 3. Love gives communication real power, because it drives us to do what's best for the other person. It motivates us. So I'm apt to be on my best. I'm apt to act in their best interest. It drives us. And this is nothing new. But am I the only one that needs a reminder? Am I the only one that forgets sometimes? If I am, praise God. But I certainly lose sight of this sometimes. And I look at someone with irritation and don't want to do that again. But love drives us. We're driven by wanting the best for them. How do you communicate love in a conversation? So let's, look, Don, you're supposed to love your neighbor. So here you are at work doing your thing. And there's this other guy that just, whatever, he gets in everybody's nerves. But you're in a conversation, and it's an important conversation. How do you, you're not going to say, man, I love you. I mean, maybe you are, but I don't do that. And that's kind of unusual, especially if we're not really close, right? So how do you communicate love then in a conversation? Well, it manifests itself in many ways. I'll share just a couple that came to my mind as I see it in the scriptures. One. If I am in a conversation, a heavy one, maybe it's unpleasant, and I'm looking at that person, feeling love for them, great value as a child of God, I'm going to use kinder words most likely. I'm probably going to be very cautious so I don't say something that would hurt their feelings and close their spirit. My facial expressions will probably be different. I'll be much more patient with them. I will look at them, and because I have this compassion for them, we can't read hearts, but I think we can see compassion a lot of times in other people when they're treating us with love and kindness. Body language, many ways that it manifests itself. Remember the story about Jacob when he was working for Laban? And it says in Genesis 31:2, Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, behold, it was not friendly towards him as formerly. So, you ever been at work or home? And you can tell, you don't even know why maybe, but there's some tension. This other person just a little bit short. Maybe it's not about you, maybe it's not. Maybe it is, but you're not sure, but you can feel it. Maybe they're just irritated about something completely unrelated to you, but there's tension there. Yeah, we're not God, can't read hearts, but we pick up on that pretty well, and people pick up on it with us. If we are talking with them and we truly have a godly love for them, they know. They often know, let's put it that way. Sure, you can fool them once in a while, but they often know. Another way to demonstrate our love, is by paying attention, by listening. That's love. Attention is love, because the Bible says, treat other people the way you want to be treated. I want to be, if I'm talking to somebody, I don't want to read in a newspaper, which I used to do, Lisa, when we were first married. You know, say, hey, can we talk? Sure, honey, go ahead. What's up? Whoa, Seahawks, baby! We beat the Dodgers. No, they're not a basketball team. Anyway, seriously, I thought I could. What do they call that? I just forgot the word. Multitask. I thought I could multitask. What an insult! What a jerk! Amen. A few women may be able to do that. You don't have to agree so heartily with me. I mean, and you pointed right at me when you said, so, really, terrible. I thought I could do it, and what an insult. I didn't get to see, my parents loved each other, but they didn't have warm, fuzzy conversations, and I didn't have that role model, and without excuse. But I thought I could do it, and my wife called me on it. She says, honey, you know. When we're talking, I would like you to look at me, and I'd like you not to read the newspaper. And it made sense to me. I don't think I've done that in at least, what, 3 or 4 months? No. People know one of the ways we show our love for them, which is respect, concern, is by giving them undivided attention. Look at them in the eye, maybe nodding or whatever, but I mean really engaging them. And Jesus modeled this for us in Mark 10:21. It says, looking at him. Now, this is the rich young ruler that says, Good teacher, what do I need to do to be saved? What a great question. He says, follow. Jesus says, follow the commandments. He says, which one? Jesus named all seven. But in the end, after Jesus named seven of the Ten Commandments, the young man said, maybe he could feel it. Maybe he just wasn't connected with God, right? He said, what else do I lack? And in this moment, then it says, looking at him, Jesus felt a love for him and said to him, one thing you lack, go and sell all your possession, give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And come, follow me. I'm not making these words up, that we need to look at them with love. This is what Jesus did. I knew it said compassion, I think, in the Matthew account, but I didn't really pick up on that before. Looked at the man with love. And I know Jesus looked at everybody with love, but I just need to reinforce. I need to pound this into my brain. Jesus looked and he loved. Looked and he loved. And I find I've been trying to do that more these last 2 weeks. And I find it really is good that I enjoy the fruits of that. I'm not there yet, but I'm trying. So, great communication begins with loving the person we're talking to. And that's the L in the acrostic listen. Now, the I stands for as invest as much time as needed. And if one of you were preaching this, that'd have me shaking in my boots. What are you talking about? As much time as needed. Well, I'll get to that. But the I is invest as much time as needed. Now, Samuel read Job chapter 2, but in the first and second chapter, Job, we found out, was blameless and upright and godly and wealthy. And there was none like him. And so God gave Satan permission to take everything that Job had because Satan was saying, oh, he only follows you because you bless him so much. So God says, take it away. And and Job lost it and he stayed pure. The Lord gives, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Satan says, okay, well now, but you harm him, you hurt his body, and he'll curse you. God says, okay, go ahead. You can't kill him. Don't give you permission to do that, but I'll let you hurt him to the nth degree. He didn't hold Satan back. And his pain was horrible. Pain was horrible. So he lost everything, including his health, and his wife was not on his side anymore. Curse God and die, she told him. He had no comfort anywhere. So we'll just pick up on a little bit of what Samuel read. Job 2:11. Now when Job's three friends heard of all this adversity that had come upon him, they came each one from his own place. So they didn't live where Job lived. Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, Zophar the Naamathite. And they made an appointment together to come and sympathize and comfort him. Good stuff. Good stuff. But if you ever wonder, well, how bad is a boil? Well, how bad was Job's pain? We get it in, even if you've never seen a boil in your life, you get an indication here. Verse 12, when they lifted up their eyes at a distance and did not recognize him, probably because he was so distorted from the boils, they raised their voices and wept. Three men weeping when they saw how hideous their beloved friend Job was. They wept. And each of them tore his robe and they threw dust over the hedge towards the sky. But here's the clincher. Verse 13. Sorry, I'm behind. Then they sat down on the ground with him, with Job, for 7 days and seven nights with no one speaking a word to him. For they saw that his pain was very great. This passage here is laden full of powerful principles. We're only going to look at a couple. But Job was in such great pain, it was obvious, and his body was so distorted that these men wept, that they didn't say a word, not a single word, for 7 days. That's impressive. That's real dedication. Look, some of you couldn't take off work for 7 days. I know that. But this is real sacrifice, and counselors have a name for this. They call what Job's friends did the ministry or the service of presence. Ministry or service of presence. What that just means is this: you're serving just by being there. You have someone that's in terrible pain, emotional or physical, and you're there. You're serving them just by being there. If you're going to learn to be an expert listener, which we all need to be, not only need to start looking at them with love, but we need to invest as much time as is needed, as I said, because the truth is this. We can't listen well when we're in a hurry. We can't let it sink in, can't mull it over, can't think it through. We just can't listen well when we're in a hurry. So if you're always in a hurry, you're never going to be a great listener. Great listening takes time, and you have to slow down. Have to slow down. When you're dealing with somebody in pain, and I learned this from Lowell Williams, Death and Dying, I think he called it. It was a series that was incredibly powerful. Everybody should listen to it, because we're all going to lose loved ones, and we're all going to know people in deep, deep pain. And it's just one of the most outstanding I've ever heard. And Lowell talks about this, but we see Jesus do it, and we see Job's friends do it. So even if Lowell didn't say a word, the deeper the pain, the fewer the words you use. Some pain is beyond words, as Job's pain was. Have you ever been there? Because I remember when I was in college, back then when they did knee operations, man, they messed you up. They cut a big cut. They cut off muscles and wrapped them around your leg, my leg, if you were missing the ACL. We found out now it has no value to that. But I was in deep pain, and to top it off, morphine didn't work on me. Well, Novocaine never worked on me until I was 19 years old. We figured out a couple things. But morphine didn't take, I stopped taking it. Didn't do any good. But I was in such pain. I'm just laying there in bed. If I just move my head, I mean, I had some great friends there in Maryland where I went to school. I didn't even want them to visit me. Now, maybe that's weird, and, well, look who you're dealing with here, but I was in such pain. I didn't have to want to turn my head and look at them or think or say anything. The deeper the pain, the fewer the words. When someone loses a loved one, a child, or they experience something else traumatic, you don't try to talk them out of the pain. We're old enough here. A lot of us are senior citizens now. We've been there. And when you're in deep pain, you just have to work it out, especially emotional pain. You just got to be praying. And God will comfort, but it's not going to be over in an hour or a day or necessarily a week. But if they're the deeper the pain, do not try to talk them out of it. It's going to be okay. You'll get to see them in heaven. Don't do that. Lowell Williams makes that point. They know that. If they're Christians, we know that. But it doesn't take the pain away. Just serve them by being there. Just show your love by your sacrifice and your time. So if they're in great pain, if I may be bold, you show up and you shut up. Show up and shut up. Just love them. If they want to talk, they'll let you know. They'll make that known. Could you pray with me? Could you read the Bible to me? They'll let you know. But otherwise, show up and be quiet. The ministry of presence, the greater the pain, the fewer the words you use. So a major crisis in their life, spouse walks out, child dies, laid off of work after 15 years, the deeper the pain, as I said three times now, the fewer the words you use. This may hold true for physical pain as well. It did in my case, but I don't hold myself as a normal example. But just be aware, just show up. That will mean something. Show up and be quiet unless they give you a strong cue that they'd like you to say something. Now, I think from Lowell, I don't know where I got this. My wife, she's really good at it too. But if I go to visit a friend that's had a huge loss, you know, we may hug for a while. And you can say, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. That's enough. Normally, that's all you have to say. That means a lot to people in pain. And you know, I've been here. Some people say, I don't know what to say to a person that's in crisis. I've been there. I've avoided visiting somebody because they were in crisis and I didn't have a clue what to say until I listened to Lowell Williams stuff. When people say, they will, I didn't go see them after this tragedy in their life because I didn't know what to say. We feel uneasy. And my reply now is, too bad. Too bad. This isn't about us. So you feel uneasy. So you don't have a wise thing to say. Show up. Use the service of ministry. They are really suffering. You don't have to say anything. It's pain that is beyond words. And that is what this is saying in Job chapter 2. But again, please don't try to talk them out of the pain. I did that when we lost a child. I tried to talk Lisa out of the pain. She cared for the child. I didn't. It was harder on her than it was on me. Hey, we'll get to see her in heaven. We'll get to see Sarah in heaven. I don't do that anymore. Just love them. So, people will say that. You go, you visit. You don't have to say anything. In John 11:23, we have Jesus' example. So Lazarus, whom Jesus loved so much, and he loved his two sisters, Mary and Martha, he waited on purpose because God was going to be glorified through the death of Lazarus. He's going to be glorified. Jesus knew that he would raise Lazarus from the dead, but no one else, at least the sisters, didn't know. I can't remember if the apostles did or not. But he shows up, and I want you to notice that he doesn't say a lot. These women are in deep pain. And he says, Martha or Mary, I can't remember which one spoke to him first. I think it was Martha. She said, if you would have been here, my brother would. Jesus says this, five words in English. Your brother will rise again. Short, sweet. Your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise. There you go. I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even if he dies. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Then he said, one more thing. Now, he said quite a bit there, but he's the Messiah. He's going to bring him back to life. I'm not the Messiah, nor are you. The ministry of presence. Love them and be quiet unless they ask you to say something. He said one more thing. He says in verse 34, where have you laid him? That's it. Don't worry about it. Don't feel pain. It's going to be okay in just a few hours. None of that. He let them feel their loss. He let them grieve as you should. And he knew what he was doing. So I said, I'm over time. I didn't realize that. I'm so sorry. I'll wind it up here. If the problem is smaller, I said, take as much time as it needs when you're having a communication, whether it's someone grieving or something important like, hey, we have a problem in our relationship, or what can we do with our oldest son, whatever it is, take the time that it needs. Now, and we talked about traumatic loss. Well, if the problem is smaller, you know, they'll let you know, maybe they have a bad hair day, they lose internet connection, whatever. You know, talk about it for half an hour. Yeah, I had the same thing happen to me last week. Because those things aren't important. And if it is important to that person, they'll let you know. You'll be able to tell. Read them. We'll talk about that next week. Things to look for, to read them, to know how to respond. So we had a man, I'm going to try to wrap this up, but when we had a business, our first business as a married couple, we had this guy named Corey that would come to our house and ever worked really hard, sweet. But he would say the same thing over and over again and over again and the same thing the next day. But if I really worked hard, I could get him out of my house in 2 to 3 hours, and he was part of our business. If he's on the phone, 1 to 2 hours, if I'm really lucky. Here's what we did. Lisa, Corey's here. Quick, hide. Let's go to the bedroom or hide underneath the window or hide. Or the phone rang. Now, you couldn't tell who was calling you back then. This is 1981, but I had an answer machine. I could pick it up if it was someone I wanted to talk to. So I'd let the phone ring every single time until I knew who it was, because it would be Corey every day. What do you think? Did I handle that right? The proper hide and not answer your phone? No, that's not right. Thank you, Andy. It's not right. I've been a Christian 3 years. Didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings. That was wrong. You look at them with love. Say, Corey, we need to talk. You are a good man. I appreciate your gentle spirit. I appreciate your work ethic. But Corey, I cannot talk for 2 to 3 hours very often. On the phone or in person, I have a baby daughter and a family and a job, and I just can't do that. Much as I enjoy speaking with you, let's make an appointment once a week, because that really is about all I can afford to talk and for a set amount of time. But I need, Corey, please honor me in this. I can't do it for 2 or 3 hours. As much as I enjoy it sometimes, cannot do. That's the way to handle it. You look at them with love, you care about their soul, you're honest with them, even if it's something that's a little bit uncomfortable, that's the way to handle that. So anyway, wrapping it up, troubling situation, deep loss, maybe a person's angry or verbally attacking you, which happens, whether it's your fault or not. Pray for calm inside. Pray for love for that person, and the right words to say to handle the situation. Sometimes pray and ask God to hold back your words so you don't use inappropriate words. Use the service of presence, the ministry of presence, at the appropriate times. And we looked at two things for great communication. Look at the person with love and invest as much time as needed. And there'll be exceptions. But if you love them, you make the right choices. Thank you so much for letting me go over. God bless you. Let's stand. If you'd like to become a Christian today, nothing would make God happier. I'm going to sing the song of invitation. Oh, you need this right there. Come forward as we stand and sing if you have a spiritual need.